Good morning, welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we are going to be learning Hoshea Perek Ches, the 8th chapter of Hoshea. And this is really a couplet perek, so it actually fits directly with the previous perek. Zayin and Ches go together, and they are prophecies of Tochecha, of rebuke. It does sound like, and it feels like a lot of Hoshea seems to be a lot of rebuke, but actually the different stages in the rebuke. So Zayin and Ches are talking about the specific rebuke to the northern and southern kingdom, and we're going to see punishment ensuing in Perek Tes. So there's a sort of a movement, there's a development. In Perek Ches, the general summary, the general overview of the Perek is, it's only a short Perek of 14 Psukim, where Hashem tells Hoshea to raise the call of warning for the people of Ephraim. In fact, the words are, Al Chikeich Shofar. So bring your palate, the Shofar, and tell them Kanesher al Beis Hashem Yan of Rubri Sival Tarasi Pashu. Run to the house of Hashem to raise the alarm and tell them the problems that have happened. And here are the indictments that he lists in this parak. A lot of them we've seen up to now, some of them are more nuanced. It's because they left Hashem and they don't call out Hashem even when they're in trouble, because they appointed leaders, but not by Hashem's blessing. So the words are himlichu v'lo imimeni. They made kings without me consulting. They invested their money into images, into graven images. They made the calves, the golden calves in Shomron. They have made altars of sacrifice. They fraternized with surrounding nations and they forgot my Torah. And therefore the verdict at the end of this parak is, v'shilachti esh ba'arav v'ochla arminoseh. I'm going to send fire to the cities and destroy the palaces of this area. So this is the general overview of the parak. There's a few psukim that we could focus on just to get a sense of sort of the depth of some of these ideas. And that is, the first pasuk is very fascinating in the sense that it says, El Chikeich Shofar, to your palate, the shofar, Kanesher al Beis Hashem, as an eagle to the house of Hashem. What is this referring to? So the Mitzudos points out that Hashem is, so to speak, saying that your mouth, Yahushua, is to be the shofar, is to be like the horn warning about war and calamity which is on the borders. And your words now are going to be that warning that people should know what's about to come. Whereas the Malbim says, no, it means them actually more literally rather than metaphorically. It means to say that you need to go, you, Yahushua, need to run to the Beis Hashem. You need to go to the house of God, the house of worship, and blow the shofar, literally blow the shofar, that people should know that what's going on. So why? Not to warn about the enemy, but to warn them so that they do teshuva. What is interesting is the Malbim says that the primary audience of this perek actually is the southern kingdom, so that the kingdom of Yehuda will do teshuva. And so they did, by the way. Under the auspices of Yeshayahu, who lives at the same time, the people did do teshuva when they heard the calls of when they were surrounded by Sanherib, when Yerushalayim was completely besieged. And this did work. So this is perhaps the rallying call from the north, also calling in the same direction. Part of the reason the Malbim looks at this as a focus on Yerushalayim is because the shofar is being sounded from Beis Hashem, from the house of Hashem, which is clearly only in the south. That's number one. Another point is that at the end of the parak, it sounds like that the focus seems to be Yehuda, because in the last pasuk it says, V'Yehuda hirba arim b'tzoros. Yehuda has so many fortified cities, but I'm going to destroy them. So it might be that the focus of this parak is more in a helpful manner rather than in a bemoaning manner on the north, which seems to be at this point very far down the road. Now, another interesting pasuk that we're going to focus on today is the indictment which says, Heini milichu v'lavi meni, that they made kings not from me. What exactly does that mean? So most of the classic Mephoroshim point out, as Rashi points out, is that that besides for the kings Yehu, and earlier than him, Yeravam ben Nevat, who were actually inspired by Hashem to be the leaders of the north, and in fact at the beginning they were somewhat good, nonetheless, the rest of the kings were in fact against Hashem's will, and therefore they are being held accountable for that. The interesting thing is that if you look at this, there's actually a very fascinating debate about this. You see, in Parshas Vayechi, when Yaakov Avinu gives the brachas to his children, he gives the following bracha to Yehuda. He says, Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda, that Yehuda will never have the shevet, which is the scepter of monarchy, be removed from him. What does that mean? So the Ramban argues that once Yehuda takes the throne, once the lineage of Yehuda takes the throne, it will be a isur, it will be a prohibition to put anybody else on that throne. And therefore he argues that all the kings in Shomron ultimately were against the will of Hashem as transgressing the bracha of Yaakov. And later on, that's why he argues why ultimately the Chashmonaim were ill-fated in the times of the second base of Migdash, because they came from the tribe of Levi, they were Kohanim. And being as they were Kohanim, ultimately, they should not have had the throne, they should have fought off the Greeks and then put Yehuda back on the throne, and they didn't. And it was because of that reason that ultimately they were all killed out. Literally every single last Chashmonai was killed out. Whereas the Joshua Saran, Rabbeinu Nissim, comments on this in Joshua Zion on this Ramban, and he says, no, it doesn't make so much sense, because then what you're saying is that the words of Yaakov Avinu ultimately proved empty. Meaning to say, what you're telling me is that Yaakov Avinu's command about what the future should look like ultimately never came to fruition. So he argues that no, just like he talks about Dan, that is a Shififon Ale Derech, that there's going to be this viper on the road which refers to Shimshon in the future, it's a prophecy, it's about what will happen rather than a command as to what should happen. So yes, when Yehuda gets the monarchy, it'll never leave him. That doesn't mean to say that there won't be other instances of other people who will take that throne. What it might mean over here then, in a more localized perspective in Hoshea, is that the kings that they appointed are not the kings I wanted, rather than it being intrinsically a DNA issue of being from the wrong tribe. This business with the Egel, this Egel HaZahav they're talking about, what's really going on over here? Just the historical background to that is that when Yeravam ben Nevat seceded from the Union and basically took most of the tribes and created their own kingdom called Israel, obviously they did not feel as if they were the stepchild. They felt as if they were the main continuation of Hashem's will. The problem is that if everybody's making a pilgrimage 3 times a year down south to the Beis HaMikdash, well, they're going to soon realize that, in fact, we are second best. So what did he do? He closed the borders, and he put up an Egel HaZahav in the north and the south, in Dan and in Beis El. And those became the shrines of worship for the children of Israel, essentially for the entire duration of the kingdom of Israel. And that's what's referred to over here. What the Malbim points out is, if you look carefully in this psukim, it says, Zonach Egleich Shomron. You left your Agolim Shomron. What does that mean? So the argument is that yes, up till now, it was actually federal law. It was demanded by the king that these Agolim, were here. Therefore, the people could not be held accountable because this was simply authoritarianism. You can't protest the king's law. But at the end, in the end of the day, Hoshea ben Ela, the last king of the northern kingdom of Israel, actually removed them. He didn't enforce them, which means, if you think about that, at this point in time, now you have the opportunity of showing what you really believe or not, and still you didn't care about it. Still you didn't care about me, which is why Hashem is holding them so closely and so heavily on this particular account. Finally, one last comment on this perek, one last fascinating pasuk, which obviously rings true today, is, it says in pasuk Yud Beis, Echtov loy rubei torasi k'moy zor nechshavu. I wrote down most of my Torah, and it was considered foreign to you. The Chida points out at the very beginning of this perek, a very interesting insight. He says that sometimes you have people who say, look, you know, Hashem, I wanted to, I wished I could, I wanted to be a better, a more observant Jew, but ultimately, there were so many indulgences that were surrounding me. I had so many pressures on me. There were so many things that were demanding, that were being demanded of me in society around me. It was such an exposed society. How could I not fall prey to the society around me? So the response to that is, yes, it's true that there are many, many challenges. There are many pressures. There are many indulgences. But the Torah itself is supposed to be the tavlin, is supposed to be the antidote to these issues, which means, if you'd so taken the medicine, if you'd really paid attention to the antidote, you would never end up where you are now. So don't use the pressures as the excuse when you had the prescription in your hand, and that is the Torah. This closes this week's 2 days' perek. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.